A quick warning. This episode contains discussions of domestic and intimate partner violence. Please check the show notes for a more detailed description and take care of yourself. Thanks for listening.
We feel pretty confident that if we know a case is high risk and we have opportunities for intervention, we can help in some capacity, right? And that can be life-saving in some of these situations for sure.
6 years, over 5,000 cases, 2 deaths.
To the best of our knowledge, we are operating the largest high-risk team in the country using this model. There's a lot of cases happening here, unfortunately, right? We don't have the capacity to staff every single high-risk case in this community. We just couldn't. We'd have to meet every day, all day long, right, to do that.
We meet the woman behind the team trained to turn high risk into high survival.
You're that explicit, right? People in your situation have been killed, which doesn't roll off the tongue very easily, you can imagine.
And others on the front lines trying to make sure less victims fall through the cracks, despite an influx of DV cases.
I think that underscored the importance of having dedicated officers to take a look at DV cases and give that more intimate look and that extra time that we're afforded to be able to investigate crimes of that nature.
From Milwaukee PBS with support from the International Women's Media Foundation,
this is The Missing Piece,
an investigative podcast series about domestic violence cases in Milwaukee County.
A growing crisis.
Unprecedented numbers of people, mainly women, losing their lives.
We're taking a deep dive on how we got here
and what is being done to save lives and restore peace.
We're your hosts, Alexandria Mack
and Scotty Lee Myers.
Episode 6, 6 years, 5,000 cases, 2 deaths.
She was. So I was telling Annie this morning, I'm hoping we don't get a call from the school. So she's doing better is the good news. But I describe her always when she gets sick, she's like a cat. You don't know she's sick.
This is Michelle Copins. She's a pretty busy woman most days, if not all days. Like she has 2 cell phones type of busy, especially on days when she's juggling a sick kid and eager reporters.
I am the coordinator for Milwaukee County's domestic violence high-risk team, and for Sojourner, I am their manager of special projects.
For the past 20 years, she's worked with the Sojourner Family Peace Center, the largest provider of domestic violence prevention and intervention services in Wisconsin. And as fate would have it, she ventured into the work by accident.
When I was in college, I was going to school for nursing, actually, was what my end goal was going to be with my career, and I was a broke college student working multiple jobs, and the local domestic abuse agency at that time was hiring for an overnight shift, which to me sounded pretty simple, like, oh, you just stay there, people sleep at the shelter, like, you know, it's probably pretty quiet, you probably don't get a lot of calls at night. I had no idea, you guys. And so I was hired for that position and switched gears entirely ever since.
In her current role, her days and nights are consumed with a team of a few dozen people across agencies like Sojourner, the police department, the district attorney's office, and the House of Corrections, among others. And together they evaluate some of the county's worst DV cases to determine which have the highest risk of becoming fatal. Together, they are the Domestic Violence High Risk Team, often shortened to DVHRT, and it was birthed out of a tragedy.
More local news now. 4 Milwaukee officers were recognized this afternoon for catching the suspect who allegedly shot and killed an 18-year-old girl inside her home Tuesday.
They were on patrol yesterday and noticed a suspicious vehicle parked near 72nd and Capitol. In the passenger seat was Hakeem Tucker, the man police say pulled the trigger.
Well, one of the things that we often share when we talk about the high-risk team is that the homicide of a young lady named Stephanie Jones was really the impetus for this team starting.
Stephanie Jones was an 18-year-old woman in Milwaukee, shot and killed by her child's father, Hakeem Tucker, in 2017. Prior to the shooting, Stephanie's mother told police that Tucker had been stalking her daughter, threatening to kill her, and had pointed a pistol at her numerous times.
Stephanie Jones' homicide happened, and for lots of reasons, we felt like there were potentially opportunities that could have existed if a high-risk team was operating for her particular case. We wondered, right? We wondered, is that possible? So our president, Kerman, reached out to the other agencies, to law enforcement, to the DA's office, and to probation and parole, and said, we want to start the high-risk team. Here's what we're experiencing as a community and with this case. And the very first response from the very first partner was, when can we start staffing cases? Without a dime, without any funding, without any additional resources, it was an emphatic yes. The domestic violence high-risk team is actually considered a best practice by the Department of Justice for preventing domestic homicides in a community. To the best of our knowledge, we are operating the largest high-risk team in the country using this model. And we are in our sixth year of operation, so we've been tooling along. It's really the part two to the LAP.
LAP, L-A-P, the Lethality Assessment Program. 11 questions used to educate DV victims about the risk factors for homicide and to connect them with support and safety planning. Questions like, has the accused ever used a weapon against you or threatened you with a weapon? And have they threatened to kill you or your children? And quite plainly, do you think they might try to kill you?
So when we talk about the lethality assessment program used by law enforcement, that's sort of the first step in a community to identifying some of your highest risk cases, which is great. That's a great first step. But then what do you do with them, right? It's like, oh, okay, now we know this case is high risk, but that one isn't. But now what? So the high risk team is the now what.
And what the high risk team does is sort through the scores of LAP tests to decide which cases to staff based on the present danger.
Domestic violence shootings, stabbings, sexual assaults, those always make the list. Those are all obvious situations that are high risk for homicide. Strangulations, sadly, in Milwaukee are experienced at such a high rate that we cannot staff them all. We know that strangulation is a significant red flag for lethal violence in the future, but we cannot staff all of them because there's too many. So we tend to focus on the strangulations that result in unconsciousness, loss of bladder or bowel, significant injury.
And then from there, Michelle's team meets twice a week to discuss the cases and create plans to, well, try to save a life.
So typically, I start off by just giving an overview of that case. Here are the parties we're talking about today. This is the latest incident. This is why we're staffing it. If this person was arrested or not, were their kids present? And then it's a bit round robin style where we're bouncing from agency to agency. Like, what history do you have? Do you have anything to share? Have you been in touch with this victim? So that we know sort of where everyone's at. And as everyone's sort of adding their pieces in, that's how we're coming up with a list of recommendations, if any, for that case to decide, okay, you're going to do this next. I'm going to do this next to see if there's more that we can do, more that we can offer.
And those evaluations become difficult, direct conversations with victims.
I always tell the story, when we first started LAP in Milwaukee County, the Lethality Assessment Program, I was sort of our guinea pig advocate to deliver that news, to talk to a victim about that risk level for the first time. And our training with LAP was that you're that explicit, right? People in your situation have been killed, which doesn't roll off the tongue very easily, you can imagine, right? What was so amazing to me, though, when I had the conversation with the first victim who experienced a LAP assessment was, she said, you're the third person to tell me that today. So it's not just hearing it, which can be powerful in and of itself, but when you're hearing it from more than one entity that has a completely different job, right, a different agenda, like police have a really different agenda than I do as an advocate, than the prosecutors do, that I think is the power of the LAP and the assessment tools that exist in being able to inform someone what their risk is. Way back in the day when I started my career, all we had was the hair on the back of our neck. That's what we all called it, the hair on the back of your neck test, right? So if you were talking to someone and you were like, ooh, you got the willies, right, as I call them, that was all we had. Now we actually have data and tools that help us in a different way, in a more succinct way, be able to identify what makes the hair on the back of your neck jump and to be able to share that with victims.
The DVHRT model has been highly successful. In 2022, the team staffed 1,074 cases, which worked out to an average of about 20 cases per week, a 30% increase from 2021. The team is now working on about 30 cases a week, and it has an excellent track record.
It is, but I am sad to report that there was another homicide this year that included a DVHRT victim. So we are up to, in the 6 years' time, and probably more than 5,000 cases at this point, there are two victims who have died by a domestic homicide that the team staffed.
You heard right. Over the course of 6 years and over 5,000 cases staffed by DVHRT, only two cases have ended in homicide. That's a fatality rate of less than 1%.
And it's efforts like these paving the way for other new approaches to bridge the gap between advocates and law enforcement.
So they're pretty much my bodyguards. That's how I call them. So they're the ones that get out of the car first.
This is Evelyn Merlot. She's an advocate with Sojourner, And those bodyguards she's referring to are the domestic violence liaison officers she works with at the Milwaukee Police Department's District 2 station.
And am I pronouncing this? Stachowiak?
Stachowiak.
Stachowiak.
Stachowiak. Stachowiak. Let me write that down.
I'm Police Officer Jason Stachowiak. I've been with Milwaukee Police Department for 15 years. Been a DVLO for about 3.
And I'm Officer Christopher Ottaway. Been at District 2 for the last 7-8 years. Police officer for 22 years. And I'm the DVLO at District 2 for the last year.
And Evelyn's days aren't quite like most other advocates at Sojourner. Part of her uniform is a bulletproof vest, mainly because she accompanies her team of officers on DV calls.
Evelyn is with us Monday through Friday. Every single day of the week, we work together, and our whole 8-hour shift is dedicated to nothing but domestic violence. So I think that's really important to underline. And that is all due to command staff believing in us, believing in the mission, and giving us the ability to do these things.
Evelyn starts each morning by reviewing the DV incident reports from the day before, which could include as many as a dozen disturbances.
So I review the cases. I get a copy of the report from every officer that takes a DV call. I review the case, see if the person is wanted or not, print a picture for the officers, and then we'll just do home visits afterwards. We check in with the victim first. We start with the victim. I go and introduce myself. So if I have consent to speak to the victim, we will knock on the door. If the abuser is wanted or not, I will have to wait until they clear the house, and then I will make contact with the victim. I usually approach by saying, I'm sorry this happened today. And I will just ask questions. How are you doing today? Do you need medical attention? Is there something I can do for you? What can I do to keep you safe? And I think a lot of people, well, many of our victims don't have that support system from family members, from friends, or somebody who they can trust to say, hey, this happened and I need help.
After these conversations with victims, the officers may begin investigations that help the DA's office prosecute cases that could ultimately hold an abuser accountable.
Our investigations become very in-depth. So one of the rare things that we do on the patrol level is we do write our own search warrants and things like that. So that's an interesting aspect. So that brings us into going to court and having to testify on those kind of things, where usually that would be like a detective's role. If we have a case and we really want to push through, we can ask the DA, what is it that you need from us to get us there? What more in the investigation do you need to get something that's prosecutable? So to have that open door relationship with the ADAs and being able to reach out to them, I think has helped a lot. And it does make the investigations quicker, because now we know what they're looking for. We're not getting bogged down in minor details that we might think are important, but they might not need in the long run.
Back in episode 5, we talked about the substantial drop in the charge rate for DV cases since the pandemic. The DA's office attributed the decline to the greater difficulty in communicating with and obtaining cooperation from victims and witnesses.
This type of collaboration at District 2, with its sole focus on DV cases, may be part of the solution.
I've noticed the more we stay involved and in contact with a victim, the more likely they are to see it through. There is a victim that emailed me not too long ago about her abuser being convicted, sent to prison, and I always leave it with, our door is always open. If you need anything, reach out. I don't ever want them to think just because this is done and over that that door closes.
Historically, it hasn't always been an easy relationship between police and DV advocates. Each could be wary of the other. And that was true of Evelyn. And this initiative helps shift the perspective not only of the people they serve, but even the people officers serve alongside.
Before I started working with them, I used to look at things in a different perspective. Once I started working with him and seeing the side of it, things that they go through for their own safety, and it changed my mind in a lot of things. And it's hard to explain. It's just, I guess, a personal opinion about law enforcement and victims. So I'm seeing how they care about these clients, how they approach this person, how they make them feel comfortable enough for them to open up and trust them with their process. A lot of people that are on the outside don't see that. They don't see that relationship of the police officer with the victim and trying to make them feel comfortable and being kind and going above and beyond of what a police officer is doing for their duty. There was a time in the case that we had a client needed a door replaced and we had to find a door. There was a time where we bought a car seat out of pocket for one of the victims. So it's been things that we do that go outside and they do outside of the role of being a police officer.
With each positive interaction comes the slow building of trust, which is especially important in neighborhoods near District 2 on Milwaukee's south side.
So speaking about the District 2 community, we have a lot of Latino community. There's a lot of people who are Spanish speaking only. I'm bilingual in Spanish, I'm Mexican. So I have helped a lot of clients that don't want to come forward because of the fear of their status in the country. They don't have a legal status, and because of that, they think they cannot reach out to law enforcement to report an incident. As a personal goal, I have worked on getting that community to be more open about what's going on, to trust the officers. We had a case in specific that my victim was being threatened by her abuser by saying, if you report this, I'm gonna call ICE and you're gonna get deported. It took me sharing my personal story to the victim so she could open up to the officers and trust Ottaway and Stack, Jason, and to trust them so she could open up to the officers.
District 2 isn't the only station that staff with a DV advocate from Sojourner. Aside from District 1, which is located in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, every station in the city has a Sojourner presence. It's called the Community Domestic Abuse Advocacy Program, and it's been in place since about 2007. Hector Hernandez, Senior Director of Advocacy at Sojourner Family Peace Center, has been involved with the program from the beginning, and he says that over the years, there's been increasing buy-in from the Milwaukee Police Department.
When we first started, definitely growing pains. They didn't understand why I was taking up an office space in their districts. Having a quote-unquote a social worker in their space, what does that look like? Why is this person here? I mean, there's all those type of things that came in the beginning. And definitely there were challenges in the beginning, building relationships with officers about our role, about how we could make this easier for them. And I used to explain to officers that I just need you to be a cop. And those times where you go to a home and they want you to be a social worker or an advocate, I said, leave that to me. Give me those referrals. Let me work with those clients. Let me do that part of your job for you to focus on yours.
The work of each Sojourner advocate does look slightly different from station to station in order to address the unique needs of each precinct.
And every district is so different from each other, just because of could be the demographics, the geography, what other existing nonprofit agencies might be in that area, what park associations might exist within each district, what faith-based committees might exist. So all that plays into how your work might look like from District 3 compared to District 2 and vice versa and other districts. So that's been a little bit different.
The operation at District 2 with the two other MPD officers and Evelyn is considered a model to be replicated at other stations. But there's a new pilot program happening at District 4 on the city's north side that may soon be the new gold standard. Here's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Ashley Lutheran describing what it looks like.
So there is a pilot happening in District 4 on the northwest side of the city at small scale right now, I believe only operating one day a week. But it pairs an officer, a prosecutor, an advocate, as well as a forensic nurse from Aurora to go directly out to domestic violence scenes. And why that nurse component is important, there's a couple of reasons. One, someone can get treatment right away if they need to. But two, if there's a need to collect evidence, particularly as it relates to strangulation, which we know is a very high predictor and risk factor for future lethal violence, if there's a need to collect that evidence, like DNA on someone's neck, that forensic nurse is trained to do that. And so then you can collect that evidence at the scene and with the victim's consent and all of that. And it's a lot easier for those folks to have the conversation and just have everyone there at the same time.
But even with all the DV liaison officers and pilot programs, the need is still too much. Officials said they sometimes feel overwhelmed by the case volume. These unprecedented numbers are difficult to keep up with. Here's Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Tate.
So there's weeks we review up to 200 new cases a week. Now, not all of these people are in custody. Some of these people are, you know, out of custody. And if we charge it, we issue a warrant for their arrest. But we could easily have double the amount of attorneys and everyone would be busy all the time because the work just never stops on these cases. And unfortunately, a referral comes in on a Monday and there could be another referral already by Wednesday or Thursday for the same individual.
We're an office of 125 attorneys, and the domestic violence unit, which is 14 attorneys, reviews almost a third of the entire cases for the office.
This shortage of time and resources isn't unfamiliar to Michelle. Choosing which cases will get staffed by the DVHRT is one of the toughest parts of her week, every week.
I feel a tremendous amount of pressure. I talk all the time how it's the least favorite part of my job every single week to pick which cases make the list and which ones get cut. I hate it every week.
All the files that come across her desk and the people and stories behind them, they drove her to make serious changes in her life just to carve out some peace for herself. Self-care, something.
It became a priority for me to shift gears. So for me personally, it's different for everyone. I made a lot of lifestyle changes. I needed to eat healthier. I needed to be exercising more. I quit smoking. I quit drinking. I didn't want to have any outside influences marring sort of my experience with the world, because I think it just impacts us emotionally as much as it does physically, right? So that became more important to me. So for me, I had to dig deep to find a way around my belief system. Not a way around, but a way with my belief system to still feel confident about the work that I was doing so I could do it and know that we're doing all that we can.
Because some days can be crushing, even with great success, just knowing there's always someone else out there who needs help. But it's those same cases that push her to keep going, to keep trying to save lives.
I think I'm better at it now than I used to be, if I'm being honest. I think there was a time in my life where, and in my career, where I didn't handle it as well. And I think it was having too big of an impact. Because if the impact gets too great, you can't be effective at the work. That's the problem with it. Not that caring is wrong, not that caring is bad, but if you are that consumed, you are not going to be able to be effective.
If you or someone you know is going through a crisis or need help, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. Resources specific to Milwaukee can be found in our show notes.
On the next episode of The Missing Piece,
we take a look at two local programs in Milwaukee working to rehabilitate those accused or convicted of domestic violence.
The Missing Piece is hosted and produced by Alexandria Mack and Scotty Lee Myers. Other members of our team include sound engineer Grant Martin, engineering manager Arlene Giuliani-Kazorik, and digital content manager Carol Burns.
You heard additional reporting from Fox 6 News in Milwaukee.
Thanks for listening. If you're a fan of this reporting, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating. You'll hear from us again soon for episode 7 of The Missing Piece.